Hello, this is Ian Mayers. Thanks for listening. Join us for a whole new season of live shows which celebrate the South. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojacks.com. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
It's summer in the ancient city. The year is 1976. I'm on an end-of-the-year field trip with my fifth-grade school safety patrol, keeping the corners safe one crosswalk at a time. I'm stuck in the middle spot of the backseat of our oak-paneled station wagon with my two buddies from the neighborhood, Steve Shiflett and Tom Jackson. All three of our moms are in the front seat, chattering away 100 miles a clip with the windows rolled down and an 8-track of Neil Diamond is up so loud the dashboard is vibrating. It's summer in the ancient city. We gun down 95 and take the exit into town. There's a kind of electricity and wonder to the whole place. The Fountain of Youth, the old jail, Ripley's Believe It or Not, talk about finding an 11-year-old sweet spot. I was immediately consumed with the all-important question of the day. How will I spend my souvenir money? Truth be told, I was never much of a saver, so my field trip money was in the red. Steve was the kid on the block who always had the best of everything, and he was always carrying large.
My dad slipped me $50 last night after he saw my report card.
Tom had a paper route in the afternoon delivering for the Jacksonville Journal.
I got about 35, give or take.
And me, I was dependent on my mom.
You can have $5, take it or leave it.
I'll take it. $5 to her and my dad, children of the Depression, that was a small fortune.
And you have to set the table, clear, rinse, wash, and dry for a whole week.
Why?
Why? Y is the letter before Z because I said so. And I don't want any kind of sour face or you try and pass it off on your sister. It's no dice, comprende?
Yeah, okay.
And don't spend it all the first 5 minutes you get there. Take a look at everything and then decide what you want.
That was my mom keeping it real. It's summer in the ancient city. We round the corner into the first stop and I am greeted by a sensory overload. This is too much to take in. Rows and rows of really cool stuff I feel I must have. So begins my lifelong love affair with St. Augustine. As we made our way through the streets and shops of the old quarter, I kept a running tab in my head. After walking 3 blocks and visiting half a dozen shops, I'd spent $500 in my head. Once in a while, my mom would see me lingering over a rubber alligator or a fake Indian knife and purr.
Remember what I said.
Everywhere I turn, there's something to look at. Later, I reconnect with my mom and her buddies. They're drinking cheap wine in a cafe. Yes, parents used to do things like that in the 70s. They drank wine and laughed. They let their kids loose on a place. As we're driving home and the sky is a hazy orange and blue, just before I fall asleep with my face smushed against the window, I realize I haven't spent a penny. Good times. It's summer in the ancient city.
You've tuned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homemade mixture of music and phraseology from the greater South. We're broadcasting live from the stage of the beautiful Lewis Auditorium in St. Augustine, Florida, a place many of us call home. There's plenty of laughs along the way, a thoughtful conversation or two with our friends at Ned's Southside Kitchen, and the Alligator Farm, and we've lined up our own dreamy summer mixtape with musical performances from Shea Burney and Herta Watts and the usual suspects. We've got the Swamp Radio Band and yours truly, Andy Nance. So grab a folding chair, a beach towel, and your mini cooler, and let's head out.
Thanks, Andy. Hello, my name is Ian Mayers.
And I'm Tiffany Melanson.
We are thrilled to be back at the Lewis Auditorium on the campus of Flagler College in beautiful St. Augustine.
For me, St. Augustine has always had this vibrant, groovy, friendly vibe.
I completely agree. Most of my favorite childhood memories are on the streets right outside this door.
We are deep in the dog days of summer, which means that a lot of us have taken the annual family summer vacation.
Whether we like it or not. Our own Mary Harvey has been pondering this very challenge. Performer Amy Channing lends her interpretive talents to this list of do's and don'ts. Give a listen.
Ever wonder why you can't let anyone compliment your hairstyle without saying, "Oh, I hate these bangs"? Why can't you just say thanks to a compliment about your hair? Or why you are sure you have ruined Christmas for everyone because instead of getting your sister that pink robe that she saw at Nordstrom's, you got the one on sale at Stein Mart that looks sort of the same? Why can't you blame your sister for being ungrateful about a Christmas gift? Family rules. That's why. Family rules are the rules of life that make your life a mess. They are the rules that have your life centered around guilt, shame, self-doubt, and fear. We all grew up with a set of family rules. When mommies and daddies get together, they both bring a list. They get passed on from babies from the very beginning. Some of us marry and adopt to some of our spouse's rules. Some of us marry several times and end up with quite a collection. Most families have lots of rules about summer vacations. Rule number 27, don't ask for what you want. Never do that. It's selfish to say where you want to go to dinner and foolish to ask for your favorite restaurant when anyone else might not agree with your choice. Nobody gets what they want, so just say, "I don't care." What do you want? "I don't care" is a perfect answer to any question about your preference for seeing the sights, dining out, where you sit, whether or not you want to stop for ice cream. Well, everything. No matter what the situation, you are the least important person present. Get used to it. What you want doesn't matter. So say, "I want to do what you want to do." And don't get your hopes up. Rule number 6, everyone must go everywhere together. No, you can't stay here in the car and read a book. We are all going to the oldest jail together. Yes, all of us have to go everywhere together. No, it doesn't matter that you don't care about the oldest city or the oldest schoolhouse or the oldest Catholic church. Should I go on? We all went with you to Legoland, didn't we? Who knew that Legos could be used to interpret every period in history from pirate ships to spaceships with farm animals and Albert Einstein in between? And we took Scooter to Gatorland. Remember walking through that big old gator mouth? Didn't want to do that, but we grinned and went along together. Hell's bells, we even took Grandma to the Holy Land experience. If it makes one person happy while everyone else is miserable, that is fine. Because in this family, on vacation, we go everywhere together. We do everything together. So does everyone have their sunscreen, water bottles, and souvenir money? Good. Let's go.
You're listening to Swamp Radio. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine. This episode was sponsored in part by Vagabond Coffee. Follow the Vagabond. Coffee, community, and culture.
It's hard not to think about an alligator or two when you picture St. Augustine. As a mom of an 8-year-old boy, nothing gets him going like the notion of heading out to the alligator farm. We gave the folks out there a ring and asked that they come and join us on the show, and they were more than happy to oblige.
Ladies and gentlemen, the chief curator from the St. Augustine Alligator Farm Zoological Park, Miss Jen Anderson. Jen, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian.
I was out visiting you the other day, and what really threw me was there was so much more than just alligators and crocodiles out at the alligator farm.
People usually think we just have alligators, and some of you have hopefully been out there. We have tons of things. So we not only have alligators, but we have all sorts of kinds of reptiles, including every species of crocodilian. Plus, to make things a little more interesting, because the alligators and crocodiles just kind of lay around being energy efficient, like some of you. Well, we have some birds and mammals in between to kind of look flashy and dynamic and move around.
How did the Alligator Farm come into being? Originally, it wasn't named the Alligator Farm, was it?
It was the South Beach Burning Springs Museum and Alligator Farm, and it was on South Beach, which is now where the ocean is, pretty much right across the street from the Alligator Farm. And it started in 1893, and it was kind of a daytime tourist destination for the hotel guests that were in St. Augustine. I don't know, somehow they lit Sulphur Springs on fire, and that was exciting.
Another thing I was thinking about as you and I were talking is that, you know, like, unlike a museum, when a museum closes, they turn the lights off and everybody goes home, but you have this whole world that's pulsing and living 24 hours a day.
Yes, they don't care what day it is. We're open every day of the year because mine as well, since we're there every single day of the year. Even when I'm not there, I'm mentally there.
Jen makes her office sound like it's traditional, but it's not. I was interviewing her, and she said, like, just behind your head, Ian, is a bunch of crocodile eggs that are going to hatch in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So I looked up, and there's this big glass case.
Yeah, we have lots of eggs that are about to start hatching.
You were talking about how all of the animals need health care, and that you actually have a veterinary service that comes out there.
Yes, we're kind of small, so we don't have a vet on staff. We do medications and injections and just kind of supportive care if we need to at our facility with the staff we have. But our vets are University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. So we're part of their ZooMed student teaching rotation. So they come out every couple weeks, bring a whole bunch of students, and they learn how to take care of exotic animals with ours. And if we ever have to do any big tests, we've been doing a lot of CAT scans lately with our animals. So we just take them over there.
So how do you CAT scan an alligator?
Well, I mean, usually it's 9 foot, 300 pound crocodiles with big bellies and or 6 foot tall marabou storks that have long beaks, long legs and crusty heads. And you just make sure they can fit into the tunnel.
So how do you coax an alligator into that machine? You know, I have this image. Do you wave some food at the end?
No, but we don't anesthetize them in any way. Reptiles do very poorly with sedation. So for like a 9 foot crocodile, you just get a board with some handles on it. It's got to fit into the CT scan, so I think it's 18 inches wide or less. And then you strap it to them basically with seat belts and tape the mouth shut.
Not a job I'd want.
It's really fun. They don't like it.
So you were telling me about some cool stuff that's coming up at the farm in the fall.
Well, we're constantly doing things to try to make the park better, whether for the safety of the staff or the safety of the guests. Right now, we've been doing a lot of kind of outdoor renovations to make, you know, curb appeal, to make the zoo look really nice from the outside, makes more people go inside. And then we're trying to always make habitats better. But coming this fall, we're going to be getting a male cassowary.
And what is a cassowary?
Cassowary is the most dangerous bird in the world, because we like that kind of thing. Can't get dragons. So imagine an ostrich with like a rainbow colored head and wattles, and they can run 30 miles per hour and jump 6 feet in the air and have 4 foot long claws that jump, kick, and eviscerate. That's what we're getting. So we're going to make more. Well, we're going to teach them how to make more. Well, we're going to let them make more.
If you guys live in St. Augustine, please, please, please stop by the Alligator Farm. It's always changing. It's always new. Jen, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We were talking to one of our favorite husband and wife musical duos out of St. Augustine, the Willow Wax. Anyone have heard of them here? And they're on the road right now. I was trying to get them to come to play the show, and they said, we're going to be on the road, but we know this guy who is fantastic. His name is Shea Burney. And I said, can I have a cell phone number? And they were like, no, but we'll give him your information. And he was kind enough to call back, and so here he is with us this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Shea Burney.
Thanks. This song's called Coffee. I put liquor in my coffee so that no one knows I'm drinking. Sometimes they catch me laugh and bring one more. I put liquor in my coffee so that I am always drinking, and cigarettes can only help my cause, 'cause it's the cause of the free people to destroy themselves completely in a bright array of color like the fall. And some would shine so bright in memory that it's almost like they're with me. And sometimes I think it's better that they're not. Oh, I am buried, my friends, for there was life inside of them. And now a bell choir from the graveyard rings. No, we would have never left if you would but let us live. And maybe we could even help to bring your troubled mind to peace in time, in time, in time. Is it time? Yes, it's time, my darling. Why? I put liquor in my coffee so that I could drink in secret, but I saw you catch me smiling. Take a sip. And I put liquor in your coffee, 'cause I thought that that'd be funny. Oh, you thought it would be too. And there was love. Oh, I could take you to bed or something like that, if that is how you feel the story should progress. Oh, we could lay side by side, lit together without the light, and I would smile for you if you would smile for me. Oh, then I smiled at you, but why weren't you smiling? Oh, is it time? Yes, it's time, my darling, time. Well, if it's your time and it's my time, let's kill some time. I put liquor in my coffee 'cause I thought that you were joking when you said that there was a love that never died. Thanks.
Irish expat Derek Coughlin recently performed his one-man show, I'll Give You a Day, to standing room only crowds. Here's a highlight which has nothing to do with summer, unless summer makes you think of death. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Coughlin.
It has been said that there are two certainties in life, death and taxes. And just as certainly as this is true, with apologies to the ancient Egyptians and their pyramids, nobody handles death and all its trappings quite as wonderfully as the Irish. We love funerals. Love them. We made funerals an art form. If Super Bowl Sunday was on the 4th of July, that would be the equivalent. In Irish culture, there is nothing so revered, so celebrated, and so looked forward to as a funeral and its accompanying wake. Now, tradition mandated that the body of the departed be laid out in the house in which they lived. Family, friends, and neighbors would then gather at the house. The coffin would be placed in the living room. The top half would usually be open. The bottom half often served as a table. Tea, ham sandwiches, and rock-hard scones at one end, dead Auntie Mary at the other. People came and socialized and remembered the departed's life. Sometimes, if it was a good wake, there'd be a row. And if it was a really good wake, that row would turn to blows. And if it was anything like my great uncle Huey's sending off during Easter week of 1977, it would involve the police, broken bones, a night in jail, mountains of guilt, a disappearance, and a hastily employed carpenter to put the coffin back together after it fell afoul of friendly fire in the midst of the brawl. To quote my father, "Ah, Jesus, Huey would have loved that. It's an awful shame he wasn't alive to see it." Unfortunately, this type of wake has died out in many parts of the country. Funerals have lost their style. It's been years since anybody punched the priest or fell into the grave or burned the house down. Years! Funerals are more sober affairs these days. The Irish wake, which has been around since time immemorial and had taken on a life and soul of its own, is gone. And that is a sad indictment on progress and modernization. But just when you think all is lost, when you think that all the joy has gone out of death, there comes along a visionary, a man with a dream, my brother. For although he is very much alive and kicking, he has a predicted death date and a last will and testament that, if carried out to the letter, will return all the majesty and wonder of the Irish wake in one fell swoop. He wishes to be surrounded by a pyramid built of Irish oak, either in Hindu or Valkyrie style, and then be placed on a 17-foot-long larch boat and be pushed out into the middle of Loch Derrivara under the shadow of Knockaine Hill in the county of Westmeath. The pyre is to be lit by a phalanx of shoreside archers raining fiery arrows down from the heavens above. Once he is aflame, like a Viking king sailing at last to Valhalla, a tearful maiden, clad only in simple robes of white, her brow adorned with a garland of wild flowers, will sing the simply read classic, "If you don't know me by now, you will never, ever, ever know me." Then all shall repair to Canton Casey's, a pub in the middle of my hometown, where he shall be remembered in song and story until all have had their say. And then when the sun comes up on the dawn of the next day, the final dirge shall be sang. All shall stand. Glasses will be raised. "Of all the comrades that e'er I've had, they are sorry for my going away. And all the lasses that e'er I loved, they would wish me one more day to stay. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now
he can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. Now that's a funeral I am looking forward to. I can't wait for him to die. Thank you.
If you don't know me by now, you will never, never, never know me.
If you got here a little early, you were able to hear a few songs from our next musical guests. Ladies and gentlemen, Herd of Watts.
Thanks, guys. Aren't they great?
I was talking to some folks on our staff who live in St. Augustine, and we were asking them, like, who should we feature from the, you know, the restaurant, food, and dining world? And everyone said, you have to have Ned Pollock on the show. So after about the fourth or fifth person told me that, I called up Stephen DeMare, the owner of the Hippo and a total foodie, and I asked him if he knew Ned, and he said,
yes, I actually used to wash dishes for Ned one summer a long time ago.
So here is Ned Pollock and Stephen DeMare with a little chat about dining in St. Augustine. Hey.
So, Ned, you've owned several restaurants here in St. Augustine over the last few decades, yeah. But you're not from here.
No, I grew up in North Jersey, actually.
Yeah. All right, so how did you end up in St. Augustine?
Well, we had just finished with a restaurant in Athens, Ohio, and we were, like, just traveling through Florida, and we had some friends here, and they lived on Bridge Street in Marine, and we were looking for it, and we went through a stop sign, and we hit a carload of nuns.
A carload of nuns?
Yeah. It was a big station wagon, and I couldn't believe how many sisters came out of that station wagon. They just kept coming out. Nobody got hurt, but we had to get our truck fixed, and we stayed.
Yeah. Wow, so that was it.
Yeah.
St. Augustine was the place.
Yeah.
And so what was the first restaurant you opened up here?
We opened up a place called Malaga Street Depot on Malaga Street, yeah.
Yeah, I think some people here remember that.
Yeah, everybody has fond memories of that place.
I know. My dad was here at the time. He said the place was always packed.
Always packed. People sat in it. Didn't matter. We just sat you, whether you knew the people or not. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So normally it takes a restaurant 2 or 3 years to gain a following, kind of fill it out. How long did it take you at Malaga Street Depot?
Well, when we started getting busy, I think it took about 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what's your philosophy on food? How is it different than maybe some other places?
I don't know what other places are. Everybody wants people to enjoy their food, you know? Yeah. Other places, too. it's not that complicated for me. I just want them to enjoy their meal and their experience and get good service and like the food, and that's it. Yeah.
Okay, so in the same vein, the next business you opened up, this one is still open now. This is the Gypsy Cab Company.
Yes, uh-huh.
And
1983, we opened that place.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I've eaten probably a couple of hundred meals there, yeah. And that was also where I washed dishes. But other people probably don't know what it is. How would you describe food at Gypsy Cab Company?
It's an eclectic menu. Also, seafood, some Italian dishes. You know, some chicken, some comfort food.
Are there any ingredients you like to use more than others?
Well, you know, it's funny, when you're younger, you're a little more radical with your ingredients. I was, at least, and a lot of the people that work with me. But we were known for a lot of garlic.
A lot of garlic?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So are there any of those ingredients, like the stuff you like to use, are there any of those things that you maybe can't eat now that you're a little bit older?
I can't eat most things I eat, but I... But I do. Yeah.
You've got to.
Yeah.
So now you've opened Ned's Southside Diner, which is on the south side of St. Augustine. And,
yes.
And what type of cuisine are you serving there?
It's a lot of pasta dishes, fried shrimp, seafood, an array of salads, and a lot of paninis, and a lot of comfort food, too.
Yeah, you guys serve a lot of Southern-style food,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
What's one of, like, the Southern dishes you serve there?
We serve a... What do we call it? Fish and grits,
yeah,
and shrimp and grits.
Isn't that the Palm Valley fish? Palm and grits?
That's what we call it. Yeah. It was a friend of mine said I was eating in Palm Valley and I had this dish, so I said I'm going to call it the Palm Valley.
So what really makes that dish though? I mean, a bunch of people do fish and grits, but the Palm Valley is special.
That Tasso cream sauce and the we like our grits. I mean, we make it with milk and butter. You can't go wrong. Yeah.
So if any of you haven't checked out Ned's, it's in the south part of St. Augustine. You should definitely check it out. Yeah. And one more food announcement. At the end of tonight's performance, the Hippo is providing pops again. And this time we've made a special pop for Swamp Radio. And it's made with local honeydew and basil. And those will be free right outside. So if you want to find me, and make sure to visit Ned's.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ned.
Thank you.
number 23. The majority rules unless daddy overrules. When there is a question as to what we will do on vacation, the choices will be put to a vote. A simple majority will rule unless daddy doesn't like the decision. For example, when we are staying at Uncle Elliot's beach house for a week, if there is a chance to visit the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, you may think that's a great idea because it's based on a book, which meets the family requirement of being educational. And clearly it wins popular vote with the family. We've all read the books, seen the movies, love J.K. So it's a worthwhile adventure, right? Not so fast. Daddy has decided we'll be going to Cross Creek. Marjorie Kinnan Rawlins' home. Who's that?
Miss Kinnan Rawlins, a noted author and naturalist, Pulitzer Prize winner for her book, The Yearling.
The Yearling, yeah, got it. Yes, we know it's sad when the deer gets killed, but it teaches us about life, which is no picnic, let me tell you. And this is an example of how Dad overrules the majority. Miss Rawlins and Cross Creek are real, where Diagon Alley and Hogwarts are figments of our imagination, reality over fantasy. Rawlins trumps rolling. We're off to Cross Creek. I, for one, am thrilled. Now, you kids, put down those games on your cell phones and reapply your sunscreen and don't drag your feet, or I will rip off your arms and beat you with the bloody stumps. Let's go.
Now it's time for a little segment we like to call The Natural World, and we've got our resident science guy, Dr. Kevin Bodge, here. So, Kevin, it's summer vacation time. So, what's up with that stinky seaweed in my beautiful sandy beach?
That's sargassum seaweed. It's the name of the seaweed we have on most of our beaches in northeast Florida. It comes from the Sargasso Sea. It's an olive brown leafy algae, the tangled mat of fronds and leaves and stems. Most recognizable are the little green round air-filled sacs that are underneath and around the fronds. You can pop them. You know, it's kind of like the bubble wrap of the ocean. Kind of fun, actually. The air sacs, they keep the fronds of algae afloat on the surface of the sea where they can photosynthesize the sunlight's energy and reproduce. And then they grow into mats, sargassum mats. And each one of them is like an upside-down island, which is abundant with life. Crabs and shrimp and little fish disguised like the seaweed, they live inside the mats. And baby sea turtles who just hatched from our Florida coastline, they rest on top of the mats and use it for forage and shelter. And underneath that are larger juvenile fish. And then below them are the predator fish, the amberjack and the mahi. So even the smallest piece of this sargassum seaweed hosts an abundance of life, particularly relative to the empty blue ocean water around it.
I mean, that's incredibly interesting, and you're obviously really passionate about it, but why is it next to my beach towel?
Well, storms blow some of the sargassum mats toward the coastline, and when they wash up on the shore, we call that wrack, they're still replete with all of that life, the little crabs and shrimp, and now beetles and insects. It's all foraging for shorebirds, kind of like a beach buffet, you know, for seagulls and for terns. And then it dries and it gets blown toward the back of the beach where it catches sand. And when it dies, it creates a rich fertilizer for sea oats and plants that build the dunes that protect our shore. So although it's kind of annoying and stinky, well, it's important not to remove all of that seaweed from our beach.
There's just so much of it.
Well, over the last 4 years, actually, there's an unprecedented amount of sargassum out there in the Atlantic Ocean, washing up on the beaches of the Caribbean and the Southeast U.S. And in fact, 2015 is looking to be a record year, and we don't know why. I think it's probably increased sea surface temperature or increased nutrient loading from runoff of land and, and rivers. I don't know. But we do know that all of this extra sargassum out there is a lot more ocean condos for marine critters. Each one of these pieces of sargassum is like an oasis in an otherwise lifeless sea. The Sargasso Sea, it's like 1,000 miles wide and 1,000 miles north-south from Bermuda through the Caribbean, about 300 miles off the coast of St. Augustine. It's the doldrums, area replete with this sargassum. And every little patch of that sargassum is like its own self-sustained world, adrift in a sea that has no boundaries. Every once in a while, one of these little foreign worlds wash up on our terrestrial world where we can study it and appreciate it from our beach towel on summer vacation.
Thanks, Kevin.
Here is our very own in-house Chanteuse on the Loose, Miss Lauren Fincham, with an original song called Shallow End of the Pool. Take it away, Lauren.
Thank you, Ian.
Shallow end of the pool. I'm going down to the shallow end of the pool. If I stay too long in the deep, they're gonna find my body and my soul to keep. So I'm going down to the shallow end of the pool. I'm shooting at the stars in the sky like a fool. I'm shooting at the stars in the sky like a fool. I'm losing all my bullets in my peaceful sleep. People call me crazy, think I work for cheap. I'm shooting at the stars in the sky like a fool. Golden rule. I'm living on the edge of the golden rule. I hate to turn the other cheek. It works to my advantage if they think I'm weak. So I'm living on the edge of the golden rule. God said now I told you so. I heard it on the radio. Hallelujah. Don't you know he held me close and let me
you so much. Thanks to the Herta Watts, too. Thank you, guys.
A recent study said that many people get more pleasure out of the time they spend daydreaming about a vacation than the actual vacation itself. When you listen to a story like the one from our own Kelby Siddons, you're going to understand why.
In the summer of 2014, on a trip to Paris with my boyfriend, I fell in love with the city's most sensual elements. I'm talking about...
Soufflé.
And...
Coquefon.
And...
Mousse au chocolat.
And also this falafel.
Yo.
That tasted just like the falafel I had in New York.
Hey, a good falafel is a good falafel.
See?
Especially with French fries.
C'est pommes frites.
Whatever.
And when I started to miss American conveniences like free refills, I found...
Hi, welcome to Subway.
Sophisticated, I know. So, after three carefree days drinking in and... eating in all that the city had to offer.
Oh.
Yo!
Welcome to Subway.
My boyfriend and I were picking out postcards near the Notre Dame Cathedral when my midsection let out a rumble.
Yeah.
The wonderful international smorgasbord I enjoyed had become a lively gastronomical league of nations that needed to adjourn.
Our situation is desperate.
But what can we do?
We have to go, like, now!
I left my boyfriend in line holding my bags, assuring him that I would meet him in the front of the cathedral once we had each taken care of our errands.
You might want to hurry it up, dear.
Oui, oui.
A little more than that, actually.
I sprinted to the best of my ability while keeping my legs together around the corner, across the canal, and through the crowd in front of the cathedral.
There, a public toilet!
Take out your monies.
All the bathrooms in Paris are pay-as-you-go, and I'd left all my belongings in line with my boyfriend.
So what's the plan here?
I was remembering the glorious lounges in St. Paul's Cathedral in London with large stone sinks and private commodes. Surely the French had something similar in their great cathedral. Ancient rivalries are good for some things. But the line on the place was impossible.
Cut!
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 I cut in line. I made a beeline for the information booth and proceeded to have my first full conversation in French. Hello!
Hello!
Où est les toilettes?
À la derrière.
Merci.
À la derrière.
Hein?
To the back of the cathedral.
Oh!
On the inside or the outside?
To the back. Such a simple sentence. What did it mean? I zoomed around the interior of the cathedral, praying, ready for a sign for my deliverance to declare sanctuary, like a character in a Victor Hugo novel at the first sight of a U-bend, but no such sign came. I emerged outside and powered my way alongside the cathedral, passing tourists below and gargoyles above, eyes everywhere. What if this happened, like really happened, right now in the streets of Paris? I started seeing things differently. No more was this a city of light and romance, turrets and towers. I was looking for alleys, corners, gutters, anywhere that I might, you know, but then I saw it.
Oh, thank God!
Quel soulagement!
Yes! The cathedral's public restroom and a huge line.
Cut!
With some hurried excuse-moi, I bolted to the head of the line, flung closed the stall door, and... I made it. Gone were the little voices in my... Well, you get it. Now, I was relieved to merely be an American in Paris again, going to meet my boyfriend in the front of the cathedral. Wait. In the front of the cathedral. Inside or outside? Inside at the front where you enter or inside at the front where the altar is? Oh, crap. Thank you.
Well, you can't think of summer and not think of camp. Our final story for the evening is performed by our own Kevin Roberts. Here he is.
The summer I turned 21, I impulsively took a job as a camp counselor at a summer camp for handicapped kids. I made $100 a week, plus room and board. The food was as lousy as the pay, but as counselors, we were certainly dedicated. I even took a crash course in American Sign Language so that I could communicate with the hearing impaired. I still remember some. We served our campers tirelessly. If they could not feed themselves, we fed them, we bathed them, we played wheelchair volleyball, we cleaned up puke, we wiped butts, we got annoyed with them, and at the end of the day, we made s'mores and sang cheesy, inspirational songs around the campfire. They were good kids, happy to spend some summer days among other kids just like them. So the long weeks passed, and the summer ended. We said our goodbyes and hugged one another very closely until it was time to leave. I never went back. Not long ago, my father forwarded some mail to me, which had been sent to his home. Among the junk mail, I found a letter addressed to me in a childish scrawl, and it read, "Dear Kevin, I hope you remember me. You were my counselor at Camp Miyakonda, and I remember our good times. I am doing okay, and I hope you are doing okay too. Your friend, Billy Grimm." Well, it took me just a few minutes to place him. Back then, he was 8 years old. He had mild cerebral palsy, a pronounced limp, and he would rather attach himself to my side than interact with the other kids. I called him Booger because his nose was constantly running. He would squeal with delight when I did so, and mischievous as 8-year-olds can be. Each night, he would beg me to read Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches to him, until one night I woke up to discover he had drawn Sneetch stars all over another camper's prosthetic leg with a magic marker. I promptly switched reading material, hoping some Raymond Carver would calm him down. It did not. He had written his phone number at the bottom of the letter, and after a few days, I gave Billy Grimm a phone call. I learned that Billy the Booger was 26 years old. He had his own apartment and a job at a supermarket that he rode his bike to. Billy remembered everything about me and everything that we did that summer. He remembered a nature walk that a group of us took, where he rode on my shoulders, dripping snot into my hair all afternoon. I did not remember this. We talked for a while and laughed, and then we ended our conversation, vowing that we would keep in touch. I hung up the phone and silently wept. Years have passed since that summer. I have lost my innocence and my idealism. I've gained cynicism and a career. I vaguely remember who I was then. But a letter from a little boy that I once knew, who thought that I was a giant among men, was more than enough to remind me. As head counselor, I was responsible for giving the camp benediction each evening after the final activity. And now, may the greatest camper of all great campers be with us while we are apart, one from another. Good night, everybody, and sweet dreams. And Billy, wipe your nose. Thank you.
Rule number 19. Say, I'm sorry. This is the primary commandment for vacationing. Take the blame for everything that goes wrong, even if you weren't in the same county when the event occurred. Everything is your fault. Rainy days at the beach, the planetarium being closed earlier than expected, that dent your brother made in the rental car backing it into the hotel parking lot without permission. At the first sign of disaster, it is imperative that you do the blame mantra. I'm sorry. You must beat everyone else to it. Take the blame. Fall on the sword. It's for your own good. The real experts are sorry for being sorry, especially if it rains and no one brought an umbrella. Or you remember the cooler but ran out of ice, either of which will be your fault. Just say, you're sorry. Now you kids, be sure to brush your teeth, say your prayers, and hang up your bathing suits so they don't smell like dog breath in the morning. Mommy is going to the other room to pour herself a big glass of wine and have a few Valium. I can't wait to see what tomorrow brings. Night and night. Believe it or not, I am having a lot of fun, and I'm so grateful to have you kids in my life. Good night.
Well, that's about all the time we have. Thanks so much for joining us down by the swamp. St. Augustine, give yourselves a hand. What a great audience. Special thank you to Carl Liberatore and Flagler College. Carl's up there. Wave, Carl. Renee Unsworth of Totally St. Augustine, saving my life. Swamp Radio was sponsored by a Spark grant from the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Spark culture, spark change.
Lauren's going to take us out with an oldie but goodie.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine.
Thanks for listening. Our production manager is Hurley Winkler. Our stage manager is Laurel Wilson. Our sound engineer is Mr. Don Ringhofer of Stay Tuned Studios. Swamp Radio was made possible by a Spark grant from the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville. Spark culture, spark change. Thanks for listening.
I won't let anybody blow it out. I'm gonna let it shine. I won't let anybody blow it out.